With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. I have been on vacation, my friends. I took a lovely trip to South Carolina. The FFRF convention was happening. My amazing wife, Liz, was there doing her thing with FFRF, and I had the kids with some family friends at a beach house a couple miles away. It was wonderful. I was completely logged out of everything. I didn't listen to podcasts. I did a bunch of reading, but all for fun. None of the heavy stuff. Stayed away from the news, stayed away from social media. Needed the break. We have to do some self-care during this time if we're going to continue to fight. And it was great. Fantastic. Highly recommend North Myrtle Beach in the off-season. There was nobody there for some, it was closed down. It looked like I did a morning run on the beach and it was like zombie apocalypse because there was nobody there. It was amazing. Also, it was 80 degrees and sunny and the water was warm. So if you're from Wisconsin, like me and my kids, this is a fantastic vacation. But the point is that even with my media blackout and even trying to stay out of things, I heard two stories still broke through for me. And maybe it was more when I was catching up, but really, I think they did break through. And the first was Trump's demolition of the East Wing of the White House, a historic building. You know, this is the people's house. This belongs to us. And Donald Trump is bulldozing it and putting up what's likely going to be $500 million ballroom where he can wine and dine his kleptocratic friends. And some of the biggest companies, including Meta, including Google, including Lockheed Martin and Apple, are apparently donating to fund this destruction of our history. And by now you've heard a lot about this. You've heard a lot of the lovely, funny quips that this is the let them eat cake. There have been some really, yes to all of that. Well done, everybody. But the other story for me that broke through, I want to share. It's a clip. This is Steve Bannon. You all know Steve Bannon, one of the operators on the right, who helped get Trump elected the first time. The guy who tells their side to flood the zone with shit. Bannon did an interview with The Economist, the magazine. And I just want to play this short clip.
And does he need a third term in order to see that job through?
Well, he's going to get a third term. So Trump 28, Trump is going to be president in 28. And people just ought to get accommodated with that.
So but what about the 22nd Amendment?
There's many different alternatives. At the appropriate time, we'll lay out what the plan is. But there's a plan, and President Trump will be the president in 28. We had longer odds in 16 and longer odds in 24 than we got in 28.
And the reason that I want to focus on these two stories is that they are the same story. They are exactly the same story. Donald Trump is not building a $500 million Trump ballroom, which is, you know what it's going to be called, on the White House to give to history. Right? This is not going to be something that is done, probably, maybe, by the end of his second term. The last day he is eligible to hold the presidency. He's building this because he thinks he's going to get to use it. He's building this because he is going to try to retain power after he is constitutionally ineligible to do that. And I actually had the idea for the Will Trump Stop After His Second Term, Will He Run Again podcast very early on when Bradley and I were talking about the possibility of me doing a podcast, because this, you know, I'm a constitutional attorney. This centers around the constitutional amendment. We call it the 22nd Amendment. It is the 22nd Amendment, which we'll get to in a minute. And Trump started floating this, pushing for this very early on in this term. At the second National Prayer Breakfast. Yes, there were two National Prayer Breakfasts this year because Christian nationalism, y'all. Trump opened by suggesting that the constitutional restraints on him running for a third term, a third time, don't apply. They don't apply to him. And barely 3 minutes into that address, and again, this is back in February. He is not even in office for 3 weeks. He says this.
And I do that despite the fact that they say I can't run again. That's the expression, sir. Then somebody said, I don't think you can. Oh.
And just listen to the way he emphasized that. Rewind a minute and re-listen to that. They say I can't run again. In his mind, this is just another norm, another barrier with no teeth. Words. It's just words to him. And words have never stopped him. That is what he is telling us. Again, this is back in February. And this is not the only time he's done this. In fact, this has been very, very common and an undercovered aspect of Trump's presidency. On February 20th, at a White House Black History event, he said this.
Should I run again? You tell me. There's your controversy right there. There's your controversy.
Again, on February 20th, at the Republican Governors Association, at the annual dinner, he did it again. Twice in the same day. And just moments away from the second National Prayer Breakfast where he did it. Here's what he said.
3 weeks. Can you believe that? Six. So we've got that money, and I got to spend it somewhere. And they tell me I'm not allowed to run. I'm not sure. Is that true? I'm not sure. So if I can't spend it on me, I guess that means I'm going to be spending it on some of my friends, right? A lot of my friends.
And again, on that same day, February 20th, the same day that Trump is dropping these hints. I mean, they're not really hints. These aren't dog whistles. These are foghorns. Steve Bannon, who we heard earlier saying this again this week, and who we know has Trump's ear, floated this at CPAC. And not just floated it, led the crowd in a chant.
The future of MAGA is Donald J. Trump. We want Trump in 28. That's what they can't stand. A man like Trump comes along only once or twice in the country's history, right? We want Trump. We want Trump. We want Trump. We want Trump. We want Trump.
Folks, the Raptors are testing the fences. And you know the story, the Raptors get out. They successfully test those fences. Representative Andy Ogles, I'm not sure if that's how you say his name or if it's Andy Ogles, that would be probably more fitting, given that I'm sure this guy's got a scandal in that regard coming up at some point in his career. He's a Christian nationalist and a Trumpist with some deep ties to the worst Christian nationalist groups and worst Christian nationalist dark money out there. He's actually already written and proposed a constitutional amendment that would get Trump around the 22nd Amendment. And he proposed this on January 23rd of this year. This is the first week of Trump's second term. And I just, real quick, before any of you out there listening are getting excited, like, about, oh, go ahead and do it, Ogles, you know, we'll just bring Obama in. The amendment is written so that it would exclude Obama and every other president except for Grover Cleveland, who is long dead. It would just let Trump run. And I do not like the way that this has been talked about and covered to the extent that it has. And that's what I want to spend some time with you on today. Because I think this is definitely going to happen. This is 100% a fight that we are going to have. I was talking about this on social media before the podcast. And I think the biggest indicator is not just that they are telling us, they are, clearly, but we need to remember that Trump did not leave office willingly the first time. January 6th, 2021, I mean, he fomented a violent insurrection to retain power. Some of you know that I authored several sections of the January 6th and Christian Nationalism report. I helped organize and spearhead the entire thing. It's a joint report by the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the Baptist Joint Committee on Religious Liberty. I was very, very proud of that work alongside others like Catherine Stewart and Andrew Whitehead and Sam Perry and Jamar Tisby and Anthea Butler. It's a remarkable piece of reporting and recording, and it's especially important given the way that the January 6th committee refused to touch on Christian nationalism. But the reason I mention that now is because I have watched thousands of hours of footage from that day. I watched so much for that report and for the epilogue of The Founding Myth, the paperback, which included a write-up of January 6th, one of the first that was ever published. And I can tell you from having watched so many hours of footage and seen how close we were much closer than you realize. This country was much closer than you realize to seeing that mob snatching a few members of Congress. This was a violent, entitled mob that believed what they were doing was justified by their God. It was the ultimate permission. And I mean, I am talking a few seconds difference here, a few seconds difference there, and this would have led to an assassination of a member of Congress. This was very real political violence. It just failed to achieve its stated end, which was keeping Donald Trump in power. And given that that was the end, what possible excuse do we have for thinking he wouldn't do this again? Or do so in a smarter way, a way that is more likely to succeed? What possible excuse other than fear can we have for expecting this man, a grifter and criminal, who is only staying out of jail as long as he's in power and who has amassed At this point, it must be untold billions by abusing that power in the grossest and most corrupt ways. What possible excuse do we have for thinking that, of course, he's not going to do this? He is going to try. And he's going to do it in a less sloppy and smarter way. And that is why Steve Bannon is out there talking about this so much. Planning for this, so telling us that there is a plan in place. What possible excuse do we have for not focusing on this and fighting this and expecting this to happen? This is a given, friends. So we're going to listen to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, who was on All In with Chris Hayes and had something to say about this, which I think is important. And it does come from some very good scholarly work on combating authoritarianism and combating fascism. And it is always worth us remembering these points. And she's talking about this also in the context of the shutdown.
I think there's two things that are happening at once. And this is something that's very important for people to understand. One, there absolutely is an unprecedented abuse of power, destruction of norms, erosion of our government and our democracy in order to prop up an authoritarian style of governance. That is happening. However, they are weaker than they look. And it is important that we remember that, because what they rely on is the impression of power, the perception of inevitability in us giving up in advance to say, oh, what's going to happen if I stand up, etc. Nothing's going to happen. They rely on that perception of inevitability and power so that people comply in advance and acquiesce in advance and give up in advance. And at the end of the day, Donald Trump is at record levels of unpopularity in his tenure. The Republican House is at record levels of unpopularity. They are underwater across the board, and they know it. And that is causing them to double down in public, but it is backfiring. That is why, whether it's a shutdown, whether it's all of this, they want us to blink first. And we have too much to save. Protecting people is too important a task for us to give up before anything even starts.
And I just, first of all, she is so good and so articulate and so brilliant and just such an amazing fighter for people. We cannot comply in advance with a third term. We cannot sound defeatist when it comes to Donald Trump staying in power past 2028. There are some people who I really, really respect who are really, really brilliant. Anthea Butler, Jeff Charlotte, who are deeply, deeply worried about this and whether or not we're going to have an election and what that election might even look like, whether it's going to all kinds. And we should be worried about that. But we should also not comply in advance. We should not assume that this is inevitable. We should not treat this as inevitable. Donald Trump is not fucking Thanos. He can be stopped if people stand up, if millions of people go out and march, as they did last weekend at the No Kings protest. We cannot sound defeatist. We cannot be defeatist. We cannot comply in advance with this third term. But nor can we assume that our norms and our traditions and our courts will hold on this. This is what No Kings was all about. We can't expect the institutions to save us. They will not. We are going to have to save us. We are going to have to prevent this. It is genuinely going to be up to us to do that. And again, AOC is a brilliant communicator there. I do think one thing we should do is spend a little less time talking about this in terms of democracy, because that doesn't speak to people as much as we think. We should spend a little less time talking about democracy and a little more time talking about freedom. And I will be the first to say I have been bad about this. I have not been doing this enough. But I have been having a lot of conversations these days about what democracy means to people. Brad and I were actually, we were working on a big project a couple weekends ago, and we were having a pretty deep conversation about this as well. And look, we all know this is something that Christian nationalists don't care about. Christian nationalism is fundamentally opposed to democracy, to the Christian nationalists' fundamental vision for this country. The idea of a Christian nation and a democracy do not tally. They are mutually exclusive. But it's not just the Christian nationalists that, you know, they're actively trying to undermine democracy. But there are a lot of younger folks who don't feel like the democratic system, like this democracy, has worked for them. They don't feel like the democracy is doing what it is supposed to do in protecting their interests, and are disenchanted, feeling disenfranchised. And that is, I think, a fair feeling. And there are institutional aspects to our system, the Senate, the Electoral College, that do make it feel, because it's true, like your vote matters less. Gerrymandering, another big one, right? These are all things that the Supreme Court has okayed or which are built and baked into our system. In fact, I was reading a really interesting and incisive draft of a book about how Christian nationalists are working not just to get rid of democracy and not to return to a Christian nation, but to straight up overthrow democracy and install what might be, what is termed in the book, an American Caesar and essentially a king. Again, this is why the No Kings rallies are so spot on and why that simple phrase, No Kings, is right on the money. And why we ought to continue to have those, and people ought to continue to show up and see more and more and more and more. But we need to spend more time talking about this as freedom. That if Donald Trump retains power, he is robbing you of your freedom. He's robbing you of your freedom to choose, your ability to self-govern. He is trampling that freedom. And that is arguably the first freedom that we have in this country. That is what the Revolutionary War was all about, the right to self-government. That is what the Declaration of Independence, the political philosophy that it lays down. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God have... That we are talking about self-government. When Jefferson wrote in the Declaration that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government, he's talking about self-government. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. Self-government. Because Donald Trump seizing power beyond his second term would be the culmination of a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evincing a design to reduce us under absolute despotism. So it would be our right, our duty, to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security, our future security. I'm paraphrasing from the Declaration there. This is about our freedom. Democracy is a way that we guard our freedom. Donald Trump retaining power into another term would destroy that freedom. And finally, and this maybe is the most important, I actually think we have to abandon labeling this a third term. And you can hear throughout this conversation, throughout this monologue, I've had a hard time doing that. Everybody is talking about this like a third term. We've got to abandon that. It is seizing power illegally, unconstitutionally. Hit me up on social media. Tell me what you think we should call this. It is not a third term because we have the 22nd Amendment. And the 22nd Amendment says no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice. And no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected president shall be elected to the office of president more than once. Okay. Now, they are going to try to get around this language. This is what Steve Bannon is talking about. I'm quite certain they've got a team of lawyers working on this and law professors and every one of them, well, you know how my feelings about disbarring these people. They're going to rely on that elected language. No person shall be elected to the office. Doesn't say they can't hold office, says they can't be elected. That's how they're going to try to get around this. If Trump is running, he's running an election. He is barred from that election by the Constitution. There is a Congressional Research Service report on the 22nd Amendment. Well, on term limits and presidents, and it talks about the 22nd Amendment. And it says the 22nd Amendment, ratified in 1951, limits presidential tenure. No person may be elected president more than twice. It also specifies that vice presidents who succeed to that office may be elected to two full terms if they serve less than two terms of the president they succeeded. Sorry. It also specifies that vice presidents who succeed to the office may be elected to two full terms if they served less than 2 years of the term of the president they succeeded. So, you know, you could get like 9.5 years, basically. Your president, the person who you are serving vice president for leaves office after 1.5 years, you can run, and then you can run again. So couldn't Trump do something like be Vance's vice president and then have Vance resign? Maybe they'll try something like that. I think that runs into a 12th Amendment problem, because the 12th Amendment says that no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to that of vice president. And since Donald Trump could not run for a second term as president, he would be ineligible, so Trump could never take the VP office. But all of this, and this is the main point, folks, all of that, and it would be super fun for me to do a deep dive. I want to do a deep dive onto this and explain to you why those would or wouldn't work and get into elected, but it is beside the fucking point. That would be a very fun exercise in some of the skills I learned in law school. But the bottom line is that all of that is untested. The 22nd Amendment is untested, unlitigated, and it all goes back to AOC's point, not to capitulate in advance, not to let him do this, not to give in to any kind of validation of this as anything other than a complete attempt to eviscerate our American freedoms. Not to give this to the captured Supreme Court to decide, though it's probably going to get there, to rage against the dying of our republic. This is going to get ugly, and this is going to be a fight that we have to have, and every one of you out there listening should start thinking about how you're going to have it. And how you're going to talk about this. Not as a fight for democracy, as a fight for liberty and freedom. Not as a third term, but as a seizure of power against the Constitution. We are going to have this fight. Get ready for it. I'll see y'all next week. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.